The Splendors and Miseries of an Old Bailey Act.
Some cases of Horace Rumpo, barrister at law, as told to and written down by John Mortimer, with Maurice Denham as Rumpo. Rumpo and the Showfolk.
One of my most disturbing engagements in a murder was when I went on tour to the bleak north country town of Grimble to appear at the local assizes in a piece called The Queen. She does keep enormously busy prosecuting people against Margaret Freer. The only item on the programme, willful murder. And if I seem to be making use of certain theatrical phrases, this is not really inappropriate, as the Maggie Freer case really began one evening at the local rep, of which she was a star, at the end of a performance of Private Lives.
I always thought you were stupid from the first, but I must say I never realized that you were a malicious little vixen as well.
Stop it! Stop it! You insufferable brute!
Speak a line at the same time.
Shut up.
You should stop drinking, T.P. Sober, you're a bad actor. Drunk, you're ridiculous. It's like playing Amanda as a monologue.
Anyway, getting too old for Amanda.
Oh, talk about old. You're slow as a funeral on your feet. Mr. Freer isn't out yet, is he, Mr. Croft?
No, miss. They're both still in their dressing room.
What was that? Mr. Croft?
I'd better go see. What have you done, Mrs. Freer? What have you done?
I killed him. What could I do with him? Help me.
I killed him. What could I do with him? Pause, help me. Or, I killed him. Pause. What could I do with him? Help me. Which did she say, Mr. Handyside, my dear old instructing solicitor's clerk?
I always remember you, Mr. Rumpo, since the Penge Bungalow murder job. Now I'm working up here in Grimble, I promised myself I'd bring you up north. Mm-hmm. As soon as we had a nice murder. And this is quite a decent little homicide, sir. In its way.
And worth the detour, as they say in the Michelin.
Lady clients, one of the show folk, as they term them.
Yeah, one of the show folk, yes. I'd say definitely worth the detour.
Counsel and solicitor, to see the prisoner, Mrs. Freer.
That's right, sir. Mr. Alan QC is with her already.
I told my senior partner, sir, I told him straight, Mr. Rumpole's quite capable of doing this one on his own.
Reminded him, did you? I did the Penge Bungalow murder alone and without a leader?
The senior partner did seem to feel we should take in Mr. Jarvis Allen, QC.
Oh, I know. Silks go with murder like steak goes with kidney. Now, this Jarvis Allen, QC, pretty competent sort of man, is he?
Well, I've only seen him on the bench.
On the what?
Your learned leader sits as recorder here. He gave a young Caraway in our office 3 years for a punch-up at the Grimble United ground.
Well, there's no particular art involved in getting people into prison, Albert. How is he at keeping them out?
You tell us you remember nothing.
Jarvis Allen, QC, was a thin, methodical man with rimless glasses and a generally rimless appearance. He was addressing our client, a pleasant-looking woman, older than I'd expected. She sat in a corner of the prison interview room, quite composed and entirely silent.
It's the shock, you see, Mr. Allen. It's wiped out all her recollection.
Mrs. Freer, Tommy Pierce is prosecuting. Of course, I know him well. And if we went to see the judge, who's a perfectly reasonable fellow, I think there's a sporting chance. I'm making no promises, mind you. There's a sporting chance they might let us plead to manslaughter.
Much more agreeable doing 10 years for manslaughter than 10 for murder. Is that the choice you're offering?
I don't know if you read the evidence, Rumpo. Our client was found with a gun in her hand.
A stupid place to have it if she'd actually planned the murder.
Rumpo, as I've had to tell Mrs. Freer, very frankly, there is a clear admission of guilt, which is not disputed.
What she said to the stage doorman, Mr.
Mr. Croft.
I killed him. What could I do with him? Help me. You've read that, at least.
Oh, yes, I read it. That's the trouble.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, the trouble is, I read it. I didn't hear it. None of us did. And I don't suppose Mr. Croft had it spelled out to him with all the punctuation.
Very Rumpole, I suppose they make jokes about murder cases in London.
Look, suppose she said, suppose our client said, I killed him. What could I do with him? Help me.
That's the reading.
What?
The reading of the line. Tell them that. Tell them how I said it.
I'm afraid, dear lady, I shan't be able to tell them anything. And who am I, after all, but the aging juvenile? The reading of the line, as you call it, will have to come from your QC, Mr. Jarvis Allen, who is playing the lead.
However, by the next morning, there was a welcome development and a sudden change of cast.
Morning, Mr. Handyside. Lovely day for a murder.
Oh, not too good, sir. The client's given Mr. Jarvis Allen, QC, the sack. Yes, he wants to be represented by you alone, sir.
Ah.
I'm not sure why that is.
Well, perhaps she thinks I'd be better cast.
Mr. Allen's none too pleased about it.
So I'm not going on with this case on your own, are you, Rumpel?
Well, I'm here to serve my client.
Well, I must say I take an extremely dim view of that.
Really?
An extremely dim view. On this circuit, we have a tradition of loyalty to our leaders.
Oh, it's a local custom.
Certainly it is. I can't imagine anyone on this circuit carrying on with a case after his leader had been sacked. It's not in the best traditions of the bar.
Yeah, loyalty to one's leader, yes, of course, that is extremely important. But one must consider the other great legal maxim, mustn't we?
What's that?
The show must go on. Now, excuse me, nice chatting to you, but things to do, old darling. Quite a number of things to do, like a trial for murder.
Be up, standing in court.
My senior partner would like us to ask the judge for an adjournment, Mr. Rumpole, so we can approach another QC.
Don't cheer up, old darling. There's only one thing you need to say to your senior partner.
Oh, what's that?
The Pinge Bungalow murders.
Put up Margaret Freer. Yes, Mr. Pierce.
Tommy Pierce, QC, for the prosecution, had a large stomach, decorated with a gold watch chain and heavy seals, and a voice like a huge slice of Yorkshire pudding.
May it please you, my lord, members of the jury, I appear in this case to prosecute with my learned friend, Mr. Roach. The prisoner, Margaret Freer, is represented by my learned friend, Mr. Horace Rumpole. Members of the jury, I don't know if any of you ladies and gentlemen will have actually attended performances at the Theatre Royal, but we'll all have passed it, going up the Makins Road in a trolley bus on the way to the Grimble football ground.
Who did this stand-up comic think he was, the Rob Wilton of the Northern Circuit?
You know where it is, members of the jury. Past the Snailsham roundabout, on the corner, opposite the Old Britannia Hotel, where we've all celebrated many a win by Grimble United. In this case, members of the jury, we enter a different world. Alien to most of us, the world of the show folk. They live a strange life, you may think. A life of make-believe. On the surface, everyone loves each other. You were wonderful, darling, said to men and women alike.
Should Rumpole heave himself to his hind legs and protest against this rubbish? No, Rumpole decided to sit still and assume a look of bored indifference.
This is not a case which depends on complicated evidence, members of the jury, or points of law. It simply amounts to this. The murder weapon, a revolver, was found in the defendant's hand as she stood over her husband's dead body. A bullet from that very weapon had penetrated the rib cage and entered the heart.
I think both of them were shouting.
Mr. Croft, the stage door man, was standing in the witness box in his best blue suit. The jury clearly liked him, just as they disliked the story he told.
And then, Mr. Croft?
I heard the second shot.
Did you go into the room?
It was a mess, a right mess. Glass broken, blood, and he was sprawled in the chair. I thought he was drunk for a moment, but he wasn't. And she had this pistol, like, in her hand, and she said...
Can you remember what she said?
Not too fast.
Mr. Justice Skilton was a kind and, on the whole, gentle figure. He had the roseate and weather-beaten complexion of a man who spends a good deal of his time dunging the roses in his study garden.
Just follow his lordship's pencil, Mr. Croft.
And the judge was, worse luck, preparing himself to write it all down.
Oh, she said, I killed him. What could I do with him? What did you understand that to mean?
My lord, it isn't what this witness understood it to mean. It's what the jury understood it to mean.
My lord, the witness was there. He could form his own conclusion.
Please, gentlemen, let's try and have no disagreements. At least not before luncheon. I think Mr. Croft may answer the question.
Oh, I understood it to mean she was fed up with him and she didn't know what else to do.
But to kill him?
Yes, my lord.
Did she say anything else that you remember?
I think she said, help me.
Yes. Just wait there, will you, in case Mr. Rumpole has some questions?
Just a few, my lord.
Mr. Croft, when you saw the deceased fear slumped in the chair, your first thought was that he was drunk.
Oh, yes.
Had you seen him slumped in his chair, drunk in his dressing room on many occasions?
A few.
Quite a few?
Oh, yes.
After performances, he stayed on drinking in his dressing room?
Some nights.
Most nights?
Well, yes.
And most nights he'd be the worse for drink?
Some nights.
Did he ever celebrate with an evening of sobriety?
Oh, my lord.
Mr. Croft, when you came into the dressing room, the deceased Freer was the nearest to the door.
Yes.
About 2 or 3 feet away.
Aye, that's all.
My client was standing halfway down the room.
Yes.
Holding the gun.
He's told us that.
Now, the dressing room mirror stretches all the way along the wall.
Yes.
And it was broken at the far end, away from the door.
Yes.
Then, to have fired the bullet that broke that end of the glass, my client would have had to turn away from the deceased and shoot behind her back.
Surely, my lord, that's a question for the jury
to
decide.
The witness was there. He can form his own conclusion. Now, what's the answer?
I suppose she would.
You suppose she would.
Wouldn't that depend, Mr. Rumpole, on where the deceased was at the time that particular shot was fired?
Exactly, my lord.
If your lordship pleases. Mr. Croft, perhaps we could now turn to the matter of what she said when you went into the room.
I can remember that perfectly.
The words, yes, it's the reading that matters.
What, Mr. Rumble?
The stress, my lord, the intonation. It's an expression used in show business.
Mm. Well, perhaps we should confine ourselves to expressions used in the law courts, Mr. Rumble.
Yes, certainly, my lord. Mm-hmm. She said she'd killed him, and then, after a pause, what could I do with him? Help me.
Yes.
Meaning, what could I do with his dead body and asking for your help?
My lord, that surely...
He was there. She never meant that she'd killed him because she didn't know what to do with him.
Well, what's the answer, Mr. Croft? Did she...
I can't be sure how she said it, my lord.
Well, perhaps we'll break off there. 2:10, members of the jury.
Be up standing in court.
Mr. Rumpole.
Yes?
A little gnome-like man wearing a bow tie came bouncing up to me. He had the sort of smiling, expressionless face you see on a ventriloquist doll. Well, his bootblack hair looked as if it had been dyed.
My name's Danny Derwent. I'm the director of the Grimble Players.
Oh.
I just wanted to thank you for what you're doing for Maggie. Maggie's so wonderful. Such truthfulness. Such sincerity.
Well, I'm glad you told me that, Mr. Derwent.
And your performance, Mr. Rumpole, out of this world.
Oh. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
What I admired, sir, was the timing. The pause before you started cross-examination.
Pause?
You took a beat of 9. I counted it.
9 seconds. Did I? Did I really?
Built up tension, of course. I could see what you were after. You really must let me know if you ever want a job in rep.
Have you any questions, Mr. Rumpole?
Just a few, my lord. Mr. Alan Copeland,
two, three, four. It's the timing, old darling. The fours. Seven, eight, nine. Now, you are an actor in the Grimble Repertory Company?
Yes.
Mr. Copeland was the juvenile lead, a pleasant young man in a dark suit and tie, good witness box costume. He seemed friendly. You knew that the deceased G.P. Freer owned a revolver?
Yes. He was in a spy film, and it was one of the props. He bought it.
But it was more than a bit of scenery. It was a real revolver.
Unfortunately, yes.
And he had a license for it?
Oh, yes. He joined the Grimble Rifle and Pistol Club and used to shoot at targets. I think he fancied himself as James Bond or something.
James who? A character in fiction, my lord. A person licensed to kill. He also spends a great deal of his time sleeping with air hostesses.
Mr. Rumpole, we have quite enough to do in this case dealing with questions of fact.
Oh, no.
I suggest we leave the world of fiction outside the court with our overcoats.
Miss Kirsten Hope, why were you waiting at the stage door? Miss Hope turned her large, ingenue eyes on the jury and gave her evidence in a whisper, which must have made her unintelligible to audiences at the Theatre Royal.
Somehow, I can never bear to leave. After the show's over, I can never bear to go. I suppose I just love the theatre.
Or do you just love Mr. G.P. Freer? You waited for him every night, didn't you? He left his wife at the stage door and took you home?
Sometimes.
You're dropping your voice, Miss Hope.
Sometimes, my lord.
Every night?
Most nights, yes.
Thank you, Miss Hope. And Mrs. Freer, you'll be giving evidence this morning. Just tell the jury what you can now remember. Hmm?
Yes. You see, I can remember quite a lot when I'm working with someone sympathetic. Is my costume right? The dress.
Oh, absolutely right.
I hoped you'd think so. I wore it in time in the Conways.
Hmm. Now, listen to the questions. Answer them as shortly as you can. Every word to that North Country comedian for the prosecution is giving him a present. Just stick to the facts. And not a word of criticism of the dear departed.
You want them to like me?
Well, they shouldn't find that too difficult. Now, I want you to be yourself.
No, you don't. You want me to be an ordinary North Country housewife, spending just another ordinary day on trial for murder.
Oh, naturally, you're nervous. Well, time to go.
Blood is sick to the stomach every time I go on.
Good luck.
We never say good luck. It's bad luck to say good luck. We say break a leg.
Ah, break a leg. Mrs. Freer, just keep your voice up, will you, so all the members of the jury can hear you? Now, did your husband, G.P. Freer, ever say anything to you about another woman?
He told me he was very much in love with Kirsten.
With Miss Hope?
Yes, with Kirsten Hope. And that he wanted her to play Amanda.
Oh, that's the leading lady?
Yes.
And what was to happen to you?
He wanted me to leave the company, to go to London. He never wanted to see me again.
What did you say to that?
I said I was terribly unhappy about Kirsten, naturally.
Just tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what happened next.
He said it didn't matter what I said. He was going to get rid of me. He opened the drawer of the dressing room table.
He was standing then?
I would say staggering.
Yes. And then?
He took out his revolver.
Oh, this one?
I think so.
What effect did it have on you when you first saw it?
I was terrified.
Did you know it was there?
No, I had no idea.
And then?
Then, he seemed to be getting ready to fire the gun.
You mean you heard the safety catch?
Milord, yes, yes, yes. Please don't lead, Mr. Rumpole.
I think that's what happened. Naturally, I was terrified. He was waving the gun. He didn't seem to be able to hold it straight. Then there was a terrible explosion. I remember glass and dust everywhere.
Who fired that first shot, Mrs. Freer?
My husband. I think...
Yes?
I think he was trying to kill me. After that first shot, I saw him getting ready to fire again.
Did he raise...
Please don't bleed, Mr. Rumble.
Oh, do sit still, Tommy. Your act comes later.
He was raising the gun.
Yes, go on.
I was trying to stop him. I got hold of his hand to push the gun away. I pushed it back. I think I must have forced back his finger on the trigger. There was another terrible noise. I never meant...
Then when Mr. Croft came in, you said you'd killed your husband.
Yes, I had. By accident.
What else did you say?
Well, I think I said, what could I do with him? I meant, how could I help him, of course.
And you asked Mr. Croft to help you?
Yes.
It was time for the curtain line. Mrs. Freer, did you ever, at any time, have any intention of killing your husband?
Never. Never, never.
Don't distress yourself. Usher, a glass of water, please.
Thank you, my lord.
Bloody play, Apton. In an hour or two, members of the jury, this case will be over. We'll go home and forget all about this little theatre and the angry drunken actor and his wretched infidelities. This case has only been a few days out of your lives. But for the lady I have the honour to represent, all her life hangs in the balance. Is that life to be broken? And is she to go down in darkness and disgrace? Or can she go back into the glowing light of her world to bring us all joy and entertainment and laughter once again? Ask yourselves that question, members of the jury. And when you ask it, you know there can only be one answer. There's nothing I hate more than waiting for a jury to come back. You smoke too much and drink too many cups of coffee. Your hands sweat and you can't do or think of anything else. All you can do is to pay a courtesy visit to the cells to prepare for the worst.
This is the bad part, isn't it? Like waiting for the notices to come out.
Now, if they find you guilty of manslaughter...
Only that?
All that at the worst. I think I've got the facts for mitigation, but I'd just like to get the history clear. Now, you and G.P. Freer started this theatrical company together, hmm?
It was my money, every bloody penny of it.
I looked at her in some surprise. There was a hard, tough note in her voice, and her face was set in a look which was something like hatred. I don't think we need to go into the financial side.
Do you know what that idiotic manager we had then did? He gave G.P. a contract worth 50% of the profits. For an investment on nothing and a talent which stopped short of being able to pour a drink out and say a line at the same time. Anyway, I never paid his percentage. We won't need to say that, will we?
No.
50% of 10 years' work. He reckoned he was owed around £50,000. He was going to sue us and bankrupt the company.
Look, I don't think you need to tell me any more. I screwed the top back on my fountain pen. Perhaps you'd told me too much already.
So don't feel too badly, will you, if we're not a hit?
I stood up and pulled out my watch. I felt an urgent need to get out of the cell. They should be back soon now.
It's all a game to you, isn't it? All a wonderful game of let's pretend.
Hmm?
The costume, the bows, the little jokes. You're a marvellous performer, Mr. Rumble. Hmm. Now, don't let anyone tell you different.
Look, it's not a question of performance.
Isn't it?
Of course it isn't. The jury are now weighing the facts, doing their best to discover where the truth lies. Or at least deciding if the prosecution have proved their case.
Oh, I'm tired. Worn out with so much acting. Hmm. I tell you, in the theatre, we haven't got time for all that. We've got our living to earn.
I think they want you upstairs now. Ready, love?
Yes, thank you, Elsie. I'm quite ready now.
You did it, Mr. Rumpo. My senior partner will be over the moon about this one. Alone and without a leader. It's the Penge Bungalow murder's job all over again.
Is it, Mr. Handyside?
In that case, I wasn't defending an actress.
Triumph, my dear. A total triumph. Congratulations.
You told me she was truthful.
I meant her acting. That's quite truthful. Not to be faulted. That's all I meant.
Well, congratulations, Rumpole. That was a bloody good win.
Oh, was it, Pierce? I hope so.
Come into the circuit dinner tonight.
Tonight?
You'll empty eye it. We've got some pretty decent claret in the mess.
If my judgment hadn't been weakened by exhaustion, I would never have agreed to the circuit dinner, which took place in a private room at the Majestic Hotel. All the gang were there: Skelton Jay, Tommy Pierce, his junior Roach, and my one-time leader Jarvis Allen, QC. The food was indifferent, the claret bad. And when the port was passed, the leader of the circuit, an elderly silk who was called Mr. Senior, addressed young Roach.
Mr. Junior, in the matter of Rumpole.
Mr. Senior, I shall read the indictment.
I realized then that I'd been tricked. I was mad to give myself up to the tender mercies of this savage northerly circuit. Rumpole was on trial.
Count one. Deserting his learned leader in the hour of his need. That is to say, on the occasion of his leader having been given the sack, Rumpole stayed on.
5 minutes having elapsed since the loyal toast, you may now smoke.
The said Rumpole did add to the seriousness of the offence by proceeding to win the case in the absence of his learned leader.
Rumpole, have you anything to say by way of mitigation?
Well, the show had to go on.
What did Rumpole say?
But what sort of a show is it? Have you considered what we're doing to our clients? Seeing they wear ties, keep their hands out of their pockets, call the judge my lord, generally behave like grocers at a funeral. And what do we tell them? To say nothing which might upset a jury of lay preachers, and look enormously grateful for the trouble everyone's taking to bang you up in the nick. And what do we find out about our clients in all these trials? Do we ever get a fleeting glimpse of the truth?
Time's up.
All right, the performance is over.
Rumpole, your mitigation has, of course, merely added to the seriousness of the event. By winning your case, you showed a total disregard for the feelings of an extremely sensitive silk.
Yeah.
The least sentence I can pass is a fine of 12 bottles of claret. Have you a checkbook handy?
Members of the mess will now entertain the company in a song.
Oh, really? I'm looking forward to Road to Mandalay, where the old hotel lay, and the dawn came up like thunder out of China across the bay.
As I wrote out the check, I wasn't really listening. £36. I'd had quite enough of show business.
That was Maurice Denham as Rumpole in The Showfolk. Mr. Justice Skelton was played by Derek Farr, Tommy Pierce, Peter Woodthorpe, Jarvis Allen, Jonathan Scott, Mr. Handyside, Hector Ross, Mr. Senior, John Church, Kirsten Hope, Diana Bishop, Danny Derwent, Alec Ragonzi, Alan Copeland, Robin Brown, Mr. Croft, Steve Hudson, and Maggie Freer, Margaret Robertson. Rumpole of the Showfolk was written by John Mortimer and directed by Ian Cottrell.